Welcome to the Nerdcast Interviews. This is Jay, and I'm sitting here with...
Madeline.
And this week, I interviewed Daniel Schoptow. I interviewed him a few weeks ago about the St. Louis Cardinals towards the end of the regular season. Daniel's a huge Star Wars fan, just like I am, and we actually recorded a Star Wars podcast at the time, but it somehow disappeared on the computer. So I decided to wait until Rogue One was coming out, which will be out 24 hours from now.
Yep.
And we talk Star Wars, all the existing stuff that's out, movies, books, TV shows, all of it. So, enjoy.
Say bye. Bye.
How are you doing?
I think I'm okay, as far as I know, at least.
Yeah, only a few more days wait, huh?
That's right. I think it, by this time, 3 days from now, I'll have seen the movie, so that's good.
Yeah, I don't know when I'm going to see it, but I'm definitely trying to get there this weekend. It'd probably be twice, though.
Yeah, I will see it Thursday night. I may see if we do it like I did with Force Awakens, then I went like Christmas Eve and saw it again, and that may be the next time I get around to seeing it is right around Christmas.
But, yeah.
It'll be worth seeing, I have no doubt.
Oh, I have no doubt either. So, let's start at the beginning. How did you get into Star Wars?
How did I get into... That's a really good question, because it's so far back in the memories. Because, see, I am old enough, and I don't know if I may predate you, I don't know. I was... four, or just about, when the re-release came out in 79. I remember my mother did not want to take me, and she stayed home because she was pregnant with my brother at the time, and she sent my dad with me, and she didn't figure I would care for it, and obviously that didn't, that's one of the few times she's been wrong. In her life, I still remember just, you know, the film stopped in the middle of it, and my dad thought it was an intermission, and I think it was just the fact that the reel broke or something like that. But I don't know. And from that, you know, of course, again, then you have Empire out the next year, and then you know, by the time Return of the Jedi came around, it was full fledged. But I don't know. I fell straight into it. I mean, you know, all the old toys and all that others, all that. I don't know even why, but it just, I guess, captured my imagination like nothing else did. And ever since then, I've been, you know, obsessed with it, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah. So you have me by 4 years. And my earliest movie memory is going to see Return of the Jedi in theaters.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember going to see Jedi with some people. I don't remember seeing Empire in the theater, though I know I did. Those things stick with you, and I'm sure just those early memories, I mean, that's your formative age, so if it'll plant a seed, then it'll eventually blossom into what we see now.
Yeah. So, did you continually watch the movies once they came out on tape and had easy access to them?
I feel like it did. You know, we didn't get, my parents didn't do the technology thing very much. We didn't get a VCR until I was in ninth grade or something like that. So there's quite a bit of time, but I think that was one of the earliest ones that we got on tape was the old, you know, even before the THX, the original type of from CBS, Fox, or whatever they were from.
Yeah.
And I had those, still have those. One of these plans is to transfer those to DVD so I can show my son and daughter, you know, what they look like before George got to tinkering with them. But, you know, I had that, and then I got the THX set, and then you know, I think we got the special editions on VHS, and then you get the special editions on DVD when they came out, and on the prequels and stuff like that. So, you know, continue to buy them, continue to watch them, and I mean, you know, pretty much quote the lines from now on. And, you know, even today, when they're, I mean, you own them and everything like that, you've seen them a million times, but they're on TNT, or they used to be on Spike or whatever, you know, you still stop and you still turn them on.
Yeah, and you get sucked back into them again.
Exactly, exactly.
So do you still have the copies of all the old ones?
Yeah. I've got that original set, and I think, I'm not sure if I still have the THX set or not, or my brother might have them. Of course, I have nothing to watch them on now, and
right.
Being that they're, you know, 30-something-year-old tapes, I don't know that I would want to try to put them in a VCR anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still have those, and like I said, then I have the DVDs of everything else. And I still remember when Star Wars on DVD was just huge, because it hadn't been out for, you know, it took a while to get there. And then as soon as it did, you know, everybody just, you know, jumped on it as soon as they could.
Yeah, I worked at Blockbuster when the special releases came out on VHS, and I got one of the giant banners with all the heads on it. And I think my mom threw it away when she moved down to the house.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I was at Blockbuster when the DVDs came out too, and that was crazy times there.
Oh, I imagine. I mean, that was great, because the special editions, as much as people might argue against George tinkering with things of that nature, the fact that they got them back out in the theater and at a time where, you know, Jedi was 83, and then they weren't out. I mean, you couldn't see them. To go back to movie theater, and I think it was, 97?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Back out.
Yeah.
You know, I was in college, but I remember going to the local movie theater, and it was just absolutely packed. You couldn't find a seat to see Star Wars on the big screen again, and that was just an amazing a chance to see that. It wasn't even necessarily seeing the new stuff or how it was, you know, remastered or anything like that. It was just a chance to see it on the big screen that most of us figured we'd never have a chance again.
Right, and for people like me, I mean, I never got to see the original in the theater, mm-hmm. So it let me do it, and it introduced it into a whole new generation of fans.
Yeah, and it judged, and I'm sure part of that was to judge to see if there was still that fan base for the prequels. And it obviously proved that there was going to be people that were going to be out there watching. If you put Star Wars on it, people were going to come and put their money down and watch it. And, you know, if that had kind of been a tepid response, you know, maybe George Lucas doesn't go ahead with the prequels. But I think with the response there showed him that there was still a huge demand for Star Wars.
Yeah, and before the prequels came out, they had all the extended universe books. I mean, how deeply did you get into that?
You know, I remember a friend of mine had the Splinter of the Mind's Eye, you know, the one that came out right after Star Wars.
Right.
They had no idea what was going to do that. And I remember reading that at some point in time from him. But, you know, I grabbed the first Thrawn book, Heir to the Empire, when it came out in 91. I still have the hard copy of it. And pretty much bought all of them going forward. I mean, any of the major ones and most of the minor ones. I mean, there are a few books here and there that I didn't get. But, you know, and some of them were very good. Some of them were not so much. And, you know, most of them I read at least once or twice going through the series. But, yeah, I had, in fact, a few years ago, 5 or 6 now, guy, we have a Christmas party every year, open house, and somebody from church came, and he was talking about Star Wars books that he'd bought. Well, he'd gotten one from a library, and he was really excited about it. I said, come here, and we went back to my bedroom, and I showed him the bookcases of it. I said, you want a Star Wars book, come get them. and he went through, I would loan him 4 or 5 books at a time, and he would read them, and they'd give them back, and then I'd, you know, give him some more. And that probably went through a year or more of him doing that and catching up on stuff. So, yeah, that was, I mean, because that's all you had as well. I mean, especially that time period, that dry period, you had to have something Star Wars. And the books, for the most part, carried on those adventures of those people that you're familiar with. And so you got a chance to play in that universe a little more.
And then they introduced a ton of new characters that really expanded the universe for everybody.
Absolutely. I mean, and you see that how people latched on to some of them, you know, Grand Admiral Thrawn being the biggest one, and now we see him being, you know, re-canonized as he's in Star Wars Rebels now, but to have that, you know, that figure, that, you know, calculating, you know, actually competent Empire guy, which we didn't actually see a whole lot of in the movies, it didn't seem like.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you had Talon Card and Mara Jade, and that whole series kind of grabbed on, and then yeah, you had the Solo kids, and then you wind up with Ben Skywalker and all these other characters that, you know, right now don't exist, but, you know, you expect that they're going to be drawn from some of those that may be twisted or changed somewhat, but some of those are going to get back into the canon somewhere along the way.
Yeah, and at the time, like, the books really got big, too. Dark Horse was putting out a lot of the comic series. How many of those did you get into?
That I didn't do as much. I mean, I knew about Dark Empire, and I think I may have read maybe Dark Empire 1 and a trade paperback a while back. But at that time, where I was especially, that you really couldn't get comic books. I didn't have any place to actually go get them. And so the comics have never been a big thing for me until the relaunch here in what was it, last year, 2015, when Marvel took it over, and then I have a Kindle, you get them digitally, and so I just have it, you know, directly downloaded every month, whenever they come out, and so I've been able to keep up with those. But until then, I didn't do the comics just a whole lot.
Yeah, and a lot of them, like the books, they were hit or miss. One of my favorites was Star Wars Tales, and it was just little stories here and there that were fun. They'd pull like obscure characters in sometimes and give them a little backstory, so it was always fun to read those.
Yeah, and then, I mean, it's kind of this, I don't know if you ever read the books of, you know, Tales from Jabba's Palace, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, things of that nature, where they took basically all the people that were in the cantina, for instance, and gave them their backstory, and they interacted, and, you know, those stories kind of intertwined and stuff like that. And that's kind of one of the, I don't know if it's the great thing about Star Wars, some people would say it's one of the things that you can make fun of, is that everybody that's ever been on screen seems to have some sort of deep backstory and a figure to go with it. But I think that helps, you know, flesh out the universe a whole lot, and you get a chance to see that how that person got to the point where you've seen them in the movie, but there was something before that led them to that point.
Or it gives you what happened afterwards, because, like, I always, when I think of those Tale of books, I think of the Rancor Keeper. And just how much the death of the Rancor killed him.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading the story, probably, that it was in the Jabba's Palace one, that showed him up to what he was doing. You know, he was about to free the Rancor and that kind of thing until he died. So I can imagine, you know, carrying on after that was a pretty interesting story.
Yeah. So, the prequel trilogy comes out then in the early 2000s. What were your thoughts on it? I know they're polarizing for a lot of people.
I have never had as much of a problem with the prequels as most people have. I mean, you know, for one, it was Star Wars. I mean, you're getting more Star Wars. And, you know, I did feel like it, you know, it doesn't hold up as well as the originals. And, you know, there are spots that you wouldn't want to repeat, and I have watched those a lot of times, but haven't watched them and as religiously as the originals. But you know, I would think that Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi is probably one of the highlights of that whole trilogy. I mean, he was just amazing, especially in the latter two.
Yeah.
I thought Revenge of the Sith, for the most part, was a good story, and I think Attack of the Clones, if you take out the love story, is pretty good. There are good things, and you get to see a chance to see Darth Vader develop, and maybe it could have gone a different way. Maybe you could have done it a little differently, but you know, I don't have the huge hatred for them that most people do.
Yeah, see, I'm the same way, and I get in a debate with a buddy of mine all the time about this. I said, if you didn't grow up with the original trilogy and you watched it when you were older, you would complain about the cheesy story, the bad acting. And it's the same thing that in the prequel trilogy, we're just older, and we hold the original trilogy at such a high level It, nothing could have lived up to it to a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there it was very much set up to fail to some degree because it wasn't going to capture that. And as we've kind of seen now with the sequel trilogy coming on, there is such a difference between knowing the end of the story. I mean, there is value in knowing how people got there, but it does take away something to know that, you know, at the end of this, Anakin's going to turn into Darth Vader, and there's not going to be any Jedi left, and, you know,
yeah,
you know, people, you know, you kind of know where you're going, and like I say, the journey is good, but I just, that does take away some sort of that suspense or trying to, you know, excitement there. Now, and I've always been one that feels like, you know, maybe they got somebody besides Hayden Christensen that maybe people would have been a little bit more excited about it too. I've never been a big fan of Christensen's Anakin, and maybe that's part of the dialogue, and maybe that's part of his choices. But you wonder if maybe a different actor would have helped at least those last two. But I don't know, when you're talking about sand and all that kind of stuff, I don't know that there's a whole lot of redeeming that you can do.
Yeah, there's a lot of cheesy stuff in the prequel trilogies, but the other thing I try to tell people is if you sat down and watched a Clone Wars cartoon, it flushes out the characters so much more, and you have more of appreciation of the second and third movies.
Absolutely. I mean, Anakin is so much better in the Clone Wars. I mean, miles better than he is in either one of the movies, probably.
Yeah.
To see that, you know, see him interact with Obi-Wan, to see the loyalty that he has with those troops, to see, you know, all these other things, his interactions with Ahsoka and things like that. The Clone Wars cartoon was really incredible and really an amazing thing to see Star Wars come to TV on a regular basis. I don't think anybody, you know, there was a lot of talk about a live action show forever, still is, but I don't think anybody ever really thought we could do, they would see that, and to see that kind of animation, you know, the style was a little weird to start with, but we kind of got adjusted to it, but the stories were, for the most part, really, really good, and let you flesh out that middle time period between the two movies in a way that, well, a movie really couldn't.
Yeah, and as the story went along, too, it got better as they got their footing with the characters and what they wanted to do with it. Those later seasons are just amazing.
Yeah, we've kind of, a group of us have started going through them in the chronological order about in the middle of season four. But when you start, you know, bringing in Darth Maul and you start bringing in some things like, you know, the Night Sisters or, you know, the arc with General Krell and, a Jedi that's a, not really a Sith, but pretty close to it, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of different things. And then, you know, the Mortis trilogy, which is, you know, the dark side and the light. I mean, there's a lot of different perspectives that you can take in a 30-minute cartoon, even, you know, well, probably like, an, you know, a lot of those were two or three episodes together. But
yeah,
that you just couldn't get to the casual audience in a movie every two or three years.
And unfortunately, since it's a cartoon, it gets that stigma of being for kids, where a lot of the sub-stories on there weren't for kids.
No, and I mean, as we've gone through it, we see some of those things are, you know, slightly disturbing, and just, you know, the death and the, you know, how people die or the things, and it's not gruesome, but it can still be a little bit dark at times, which is befitting a thing that has war in the title of it. But, you know, my son was three when it came out. Well, I still remember we sat down and we would watch every week. We would sit down and we would watch it. And he is, you know, that I think that really helped him get involved. I mean, he already knew Star Wars. He was starting to get involved. But I think that helped him plug into the whole universe in a way that maybe just watching the movies wouldn't have.
Yeah, my son's five, and every Tuesday night we sit down and knock on a couple episodes on Boys Night. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that. So you mentioned the characters and stories no longer in canon. Is there anything from that you would like to see pulled into canon? I mean, I know they got Thrawn pulled in now.
Yeah, I think now that you've got Thrawn, I think the next one that most people would want and I would agree with would be Mara Jade. Whether her relationship with Luke Skywalker is still the same or not, I think she's a very interesting character and a character that would fit pretty interestingly into Rebels because she would be, you know, an evil person at that time, if you will. I mean, she's working for the Emperor. So I think something like that would probably be the best. You know, I can't think of some of the other. I mean, some of the other Jedi I know that people are really fond of. You know, Cal Katarn or Qorn Horn, and those wouldn't be bad to get added in too. But I think if you're going to pick just one, I think you'd go Mara Jade.
So, do you think they'll pull a lot of the like Knights of the Old Republic stuff in? Because that's one period that they really haven't touched on at all in the new canon.
I don't know. I mean, that's some of that. Some of that I'm not as familiar with. I have read some of the books back in that time period, but I've never played the game or anything of that nature. But it feels like if you're going to do something like that, it's going to be like what they've done here with the cartoons, or they're going to try to bring it in as a reference here and there. They may toss some of that in. It's obviously something that is very difficult to explain to, you know, casual fans, I think. Trying to, you know, you couldn't do, I know some people talk about, oh, let's do an old, you know, Knights of the Old Republic type movie. But when you have to explain, hey, this is 1,000 years before, you know, Luke and Leia, and there's no connection whatsoever, pretty much. I don't think you get a, you know, it's difficult to tell that to an audience. So, but, you know, are they going to, you know, could they stumble over relics? Could they use that kind of thing in Rebels or whatever comes next? Yeah, I could see that.
I think they could even go the comic book route where they're doing the Journals of Ben Kenobi, and somehow Luke comes across a holocron and something, and they show old adventures from way before the Clone Wars.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. They could do that. I mean, they've done that, like you said, with the Obi-Wan Kenobi stories, and then I think the Yoda one has come out. I don't think if it hasn't come out, it's coming out, and I haven't read it yet. But, you know, to have him run into things of that nature, because, you know, Luke is still obviously never going to be a full-fledged Jedi in these things until they get past Return of the Jedi, but he can still learn things here and there. He's got to learn something. He made his own lightsaber, so he's got to learn things here and there to improve his Jedi knowledge.
So we can get into the new stuff then. So what was your thought on Force Awakens?
My initial thought, and it seems to be one that a lot of people have had too, when I walked out of the theater, I was like, yeah, I really enjoyed it, but it was a little bit, you know, repetitive. You know, it's very derivative of the first movie. Now, I've watched it 3 or 4, 5, 6 times since then, maybe more, because I know we went and saw it in theater 4 times, I know, and I've watched it a few times since I bought it. And I think that kind of fades away. I mean, you still see the overarching line, a lot of the similarities, you know, blowing up the big thing, you know, person starting on their destiny. But I still think it's got enough of a fresh cover on it and some new eyes that it's very good. Now, I'm interested to see how Episode 8 is going to kind of go from there, because it's not going to be a rehash of Empire. And J.J. Abrams has said, you know, we really did Force Awakens like this to make sure we brought people back after the whole prequel things. You know, Force Awakens is a real fun movie to watch, and I enjoyed it. Like I said, I think that the excitement of Rogue One, even though we know the end, we don't know these people, and then Episode 8, because we have absolutely no idea what's going to go forward from that, are going to be even better.
So what are your expectations for Rogue One this weekend?
A lot of people to die. Some people are saying, you know, they're going to wipe the whole team out. I don't think that, but I do think, you know, a good chunk of that team dies, because these are people that we haven't heard of, which is not something that you can't write around. But I mean, this is a huge, you know, big dangerous thing. It wouldn't be surprised, but I think it's going to be, I mean, it looks, from all indications, it looks like it's going to be quite interesting. It's going to be interesting to see Darth Vader on the screen again. I mean, we haven't seen that, you know, at all. I mean, we saw the very end of Revenge of the Sith, but that hardly counts, so we haven't really seen Vader as Vader, unless you've watched Rebels, since 1983 or whatever. You know, I think that it's going to be interesting to see, you know, it's not going to be they get the plans away at the end, but that's all we know that could be positive. It's not going to be as upbeat of an ending as we see most of the time in Star Wars.
And I think that's one of the things that appeals to me about this movie. It's going to be a little bit darker. Yeah, I'm of the same opinion, too, that no one's going to make it out of this. They're going to transmit the plans, and then they're gone.
Yeah, I mean, I could, like I said, I could see, honestly, I could see a couple of them surviving, and it would be interesting to see, like, Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor, for instance, you know, survive, and, you know, a spinoff movie 3 or 4 years down the road that's another adventure set between Hoth and Endor or something of that nature with the same, you know, with their still available in the Rebellion. But again, once you get them that good, you have to start saying, well, why weren't they at Hoth? Why weren't they, you know, attacking the Death Star? And it's some of the same stuff that Rebels runs into. You know, how did, you know, Luke is the last of the Jedi. Well, what's going to happen with, you know, Kanan especially, or Ezra?
Yeah.
Those kind of things have to be answered, and not necessarily in a good way. So you're right. I think that most of these people don't survive just because it's not easy to fit them into the story if they do.
Yeah, and I thought Rebels did a good job in season one. That's the only one I've watched so far. I'm hopefully getting season two for Christmas and watch it then. But season one, I felt like, did a good job of explaining they're one little cell of the Rebellion. They don't know how big the whole Rebellion is. And so I think the movie will probably play on that a little bit too, to show here's the high command, but we've got people all over the place.
It's true. And I will say, and I don't think it spoils too much, that in season two, they do connect up a little bit more into the bigger scheme of things. But they're still not, you know, full-fledged. You know, we haven't seen any Mothmas or anything of that nature. Although I did find it interesting, I saw somebody put up a screenshot of one of the trailers that made it look like the Ghost was, or at least that kind of ship, was in Rogue One.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that's going to be... I'm going to be interested to see if that's actually the Ghost, if there's some sort of reference there, or if it's just another VCX ship, which it probably is, and it probably just will go on as an Easter egg, but it's still a possibility. But yeah, I think that, you know, I think that's the way you can get these people to survive this movie, is these cells are separated. I mean, everybody gets together at the end of Jedi, but until then, I don't know that the Rebellion ever got all in one place, because they didn't want the Empire to blow them up if they did. So
yeah,
just because we haven't seen them, there is a logical reason to think that they had another cell here or there.
And they've touched on that a little bit, too, in the books with Battlefront, the novel for that. I mean, you're sitting there, and they're fighting different battles than anything you see in the movies, and it's all going on at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's the one new canon book I haven't read, but you're right. I mean, we focus on Hoth, but, you know, the whole Rebellion wasn't at Hoth. I mean, we didn't see Mon Mothma at Hoth. I mean,
right.
If nothing else, I mean, they have to be scattered somewhat and spread out. It's just, I mean, it's an easy hand wave, if you will, to say, oh yeah, they were over there, but there is some truth to that as well.
Yeah. So did you read Catalyst to get ready for the movie?
I did. I picked up Catalyst. I thought that was a pretty good, interesting read to see the relationship between Galen Erso and Orson Krennic, which I think is going to be just a huge part of this. And I think it kind of helps explain, in my mind at least, why it took 20 years to build the first Death Star, and it took like 3 years to build the second one. Because it wasn't the construction that was the big issue. It was the figuring out the... you know, the technology behind the laser.
Yeah.
And once you've got that beaten, you know, figured out for the first one, then it's a pretty easy job to replicate after that. So I thought that was kind of an interesting way to look at the construction of that thing.
Yeah, and I'm about a third of the way through it. I'm rushing to get through it by the weekend. Do you think it's critical for probably more for the hardcore fans than the casual fans, but... do you feel like it's going to help you understand the story a little more?
I don't know. Again, Catalyst is really, really tied into Galen's and Krennic's relationship. I feel like that's the overarching thing. So I don't think it's critical. I mean, because you kind of know, especially if you've read that much of the book, you kind of know where they've come from, though, that they've got that background.
Yeah.
And I'm sure anything real important is going to show up in the movie. I just think it gives you a little bit of background. You can know a little bit more about what his research is, why they're really needing him, or why they've had him. But, you know, if you don't get it done, I don't think it's going to ruin your you're going to be asking what's going on. But it's nice to have just a little bit of extra context, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's, well, the people that are going to read it are going to be the hardcore fans.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to be they're going to be the people that know about the Kyber crystals. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see what they say about the crystals in the movie, if they even touch on it.
And I'm sure that they will some. But I don't know. Again, it just depends on... It probably won't be a whole lot, just because the focus is going to be getting the plans. I'm sure that there's going to be some references to it. And, I mean, we've seen... It's kind of interesting to see how Kyber crystals have been this big. I think they were kind of... You know, that was a non-canon thing, but... You know, now, you know, Rebels has seen some interactions with Kyber crystals and, you know, Clone Wars when they went to Ilium and got their lightsabers and things like that. It really seems to be a thing that pops up all over the place in Star Wars now, and it's just kind of interesting to see it become so prominent when it was kind of one of those, you know, really trivia type questions beforehand.
Yeah, and my kids have all seen that part of the series. When they build the lightsabers, because I wanted them to know that, and we're watching the Saw Gerrera episodes now, so they'll be all ready for what little kids can understand at that point.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting for the Lucasfilm to take a character in Clone Wars, you know, an actual cartoon character completely created for that show, and now taking him into live action. And again, they've said, you know, they're not necessarily going to do this for everybody, and this was just a guy that seemed to... This is the kind of person they wanted, and we already have this guy, so let's use him. But it is interesting to see that kind of thing, and I think that does open the door for things like Ahsoka to show up somewhere along the way, or other things like that, Rex to be around, or Hera or Kanan, or even... I mean, these cartoon people have that ability to jump. Now, you know, it's difficult to sometimes... make that scheduling work, you know, and how do you explain, you know, where does the story fit in the timeline? But it will be interesting to know if there's a little bit more cross-pollination, if you will, going forward.
Yeah, and I've been looking into some of the, like, Clone Wars characters, and a couple of them have popped up in the original trilogies. They've kind of worked them in. Mm-hmm. Like Anakin's Admiral, I can't think of his name right now.
Yularen.
Yeah. Yeah, he's on the Death Star when it blows up.
Yeah, I think he's the one. Is he the one wearing the white outfit? Yeah, I think that's... I looked into some of that. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that they pulled from that, but, you know, and I guess that's a little bit more understandable to take from the movie and kind of develop that character like we've talked about earlier in the stories and books. This is just another way, but to take an original character and then bump them into big prominence. I mean, because, you know, there's going to be millions of people that go see Rogue One that have no idea about Rebel or Clone Wars or any way, and so they won't necessarily know that character, but it's still, they thought it was worth, you know, making that translation.
Another favorite of mine is the people that say Rex is in Return of the Jedi as the old Rebel on Endor with the big beard.
I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, yeah, you'll have to look that up. It's pretty funny, and he seems about the right age. It's an older gentleman with a big beard.
I'll have to look at that one and see that, because I have not heard that one. But that would be kind of interesting to see.
Yeah. So you said you haven't read Battlefront, but you've read the rest of the new canon books?
I have read the rest of the new ones. Usually I get them... A lot of times I'm just, you know, pre-order them on the Kindle and then download when they come out. So, yeah. I think, except for Battlefront, and not that there was anything wrong with that. I meant to kind of get it, but being that it tied into a game that, at least at the time, I hadn't ever played, and I know it really didn't, you didn't have to, but it still kind of fell to the bottom of the list. But I do need to go get that one.
Yeah, it was okay. For a Star Wars completist, it's worth reading. But I didn't get a ton out of the story. It's probably one of my least favorite new canon ones.
Good. Well, if I was going to skip one, then I guess that was the one to skip. So, But yeah, I think they've been, for the most part, pretty interesting. I mean, Tarkin's book was good, and A New Dawn, when you had the beginning of the Hera and Kanan relationship, and things of that nature. I think they've been pretty interesting to see. Now, obviously, the new Thrawn book that comes out in like March or something is going to be probably really huge to read, but for the most part, they've been pretty good. And I think it feels like they've slowed down it's down to 4 or 5 books a year at the most. And it felt like, at least for a while there, they were kind of coming out a little bit faster, especially when, they would write trilogies and, a book would be out every other month or something like that in those.
Yeah, and the problem with that is they had so many different writers on the books. The whole storyline got convoluted, and it was hard to tell where things fit in, and this contradict 3 books ago, and it made it very difficult to follow.
Yeah, and I mean, especially by the time it got to, I think it was like The Path of the Jedi or whatever, it was like every third book was written by a certain person, and that was the one that was heavy Mandalorian, and then you go to another author, and they would have a different focus, and that's fine, and it still worked somewhat, but you're right. It let them get the books out faster, but it also kind of lost a little bit of cohesion as well.
So when they said the extended universe is all legends now and none of it's canon anymore, how did you feel?
It didn't bother me too much because, again, those stories are there. I mean, these are stories that we know, and they're still able to be read, and you can still enjoy them. I think that it made it, it just made so much sense. We wouldn't want them to going into this new trilogy remaking the Thrawn trilogy. I mean, as much as it'd be interesting to see, you would know the story. I mean, it's kind of like the comic book movies now. I mean, they take the inspiration from Civil War or whatever, or arcs in the comic book, so you don't really know the ending, but you kind of have an idea of where it's going. And that would have probably been the same way. But this is, a fresh new canvas, and it lets them... I mean, there's so much stuff that contradicted and so much stuff that just wasn't any good. There was no reason for them to be bound by that. So it didn't bother me too much because I was interested to see what they were going to do with the new stuff.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. Once I finish Catalyst, I'll have all the new canon stuff done. And I'm planning on going back and picking up some of them I didn't read from the Legend stuff, like Darth Plagueis I'd never read.
Oh, so, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So I want to go back and kind of read it. And I don't think it's going to take away from the overall story, knowing it's not part of the official Star Wars timeline now. But I think it gives a little more insight onto some of the existing characters. Because you hear Plagueis when you hear Palpatine. And maybe it's not exactly how they're picturing it now, but it gives you a little insight into how he got to where he was, or Palpatine was, in the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And again, I mean, what it boils down to is it's entertainment. I mean, it shouldn't be... We get more entertainment as fans when they're, the stories mash up and the stories, the timelines, there's continuity and things of that nature. But when it boils down to it, if you read the book, if you enjoy the book, then you've had a good experience. It doesn't necessarily have to fit into everything else. And maybe sometimes it's good because you don't have to try to remember all the other stuff that it was. Try to remember the timeline or remember the history of this person or that. Part of me gets a little concerned when I'm reading a book and there's a character pop up. I'm like, should I know that character? Is it coming somebody from 4 or 5 books ago? And at least with now, you don't have to worry about it as much with that. But I think the old books, especially the good ones, I mean, it seems like all the books that James Luciano wrote, which is Plagueis was one of them, were really good. Some of the, some of the other authors, they were pretty good, but then there were some other authors that you just skip because it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, and as a big comic book reader, I've been able to look past all the errors and continuity and all the retconning and everything. So reading these books that aren't part of the story probably shouldn't bother me too much.
Yeah, it shouldn't. Like you said, I mean, if you follow comic books, I mean, that this timeline gets reset or jumbled around or whatever. I mean, at least, if nothing else, Disney didn't do that. They didn't try to fix it all. They just said, here, cut it, start it over. And so reading that, if you want to read it as an alternate timeline, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah. So what is your favorite so far from the new canon?
Trying to remember. I may have to think about them all because I don't know that I've read any of them more than once. Just that's the good thing about so much stuff coming out. You don't necessarily have to.
Yeah.
I did find Tarkin fairly interesting, just because it kind of gave his background and in a way that he wasn't necessarily, this all-powerful, all-knowing thing. I mean, he kind of showed how he built his career up. And I did enjoy Catalyst as well. I can't think of any of them that just stood out hugely, but they've all been very enjoyable.
See, my favorite probably has been Lost Stars.
Mm.
And while I wasn't crazy about the whole romance thing in it,
right,
it gave different perspectives of the original trilogy that I never thought about, like what it was like to be an Imperial officer.
Yeah, that one was pretty interesting because you saw them, you know, people on the Death Star and how they rationalized the building of the Death Star. We're just building it because we'll never have to use it. And then, you know, they use it on Alderaan and they try to justify that and things of that nature, how you fought for what you thought was right. I mean, they fought for order in the galaxy, if you will, and there were people that were not evil people. That's their thought process was we need to, you know, authority and order, and that there's a reasonableness there. That you got to see in that novel that you didn't necessarily get to see otherwise. And I think that what Sierra Ree has been kind of is one that is, I think, I don't remember, I saw if she's going to be in comics or somewhere else as well. I think that's their characters that may get a new life as well.
Yeah, Claudia Gray has said she wants to go back and continue their story. But
and they very well, I mean, eventually they probably will, because I think that was probably one of the best ones in the lead up to Force Awakens. I mean, there were some, you know, some young adult books that were all right, and there were some other books in that area, but that was probably the best one in that lead up. And it really, like you said, it took you from basically through Star Wars all the way through to the Battle of Jakku, and gave you a different perspective of it.
Yeah, and then you get to see the crashed Star Destroyers on Jakku when Force Awakens starts, and you're like, well, I kind of know how that got there.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing, because I think, you know, when we saw the trailers for that, I don't know that we really gave it much thought of how that was, but you know, we probably thought it was more recent, and to find out that this, you know, this battle happened just a year after, you know, the battle at Endor, it's kind of interesting as well that those were old and weathered. Now, the Aftermath series has been pretty interesting, and I'm looking forward to the third one of that to see how that kind of starts, you know, leading up to that battle as well.
Yeah, because the second book left you right when it was about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. The second book was really good. The first one was just okay.
Yeah, both books have lost me a little bit because they're written in the second person.
Yeah,
you know, it's current, it's present tense, I guess is the biggest thing.
Yeah,
and that's a little bit strange. But I've liked. You're right. It was better the second one because it had more of an overarching story versus hit and miss. But the interludes in both on all those things have been very interesting as well. I think it was the first book that had the interlude with the Sith-like disciples who were trying to find dark side artifacts like Darth Vader's lightsaber and things like that. You know, is this how Kylo Ren winds up with Darth Vader's mask? It would seem to lead toward that, but there's a lot of time that passes between those things. So, you know, those kind of little seeds and nuggets that are planted around it, and we'll see how far that goes. You know, because there's, you know, 30 years that they can cover, and they can't cover it probably very much until the end of this trilogy has been filmed and out there, but they'll probably do little bits and pieces here and there.
Yeah. And so, lastly, the comic books, the Marvel comics. Have you read all of them?
I think so. I can't think of any that I've missed. And again, those are, I've liked them. I don't know how much they stick with me.
Yeah.
But I like the storylines for the most part. I wasn't all that excited about the Obi-Wan and Anakin little short one. But the Han Solo one was good. The Darth Vader one was quite interesting, and it's going to be interesting. I guess the Dr. Aphra that's kind of spun out of that. I don't think I've read that one yet. I think I've got it if it's out. I've got a couple, I think, that are the more recent ones that I haven't read yet that I need to. But to see some of those, especially in Vader, when you had Aphra and then you had the murderous droids that were basically, you know, evil R2 and evil 3PO, that were interesting to see. I think that's going to be fun for them to fill in some gaps in the comics as well. And they haven't done a lot of that yet.
Yeah.
But except for the, you know, they've got Poe Dameron series going right now, which gives you a little bit of time right before Force Awakens and what he was doing while he's trying to track down Larson Tucker. But for the most part, they're sticking in that original trilogy time period. When they start branching out from that, I think that's going to be really fun.
Yeah, because, I mean, the only one they've done otherwise has been the Obi-Wan and Anakin, which you mentioned. And then they had the C-3PO one-shot that explained how he got the red arm.
Right.
And then the Poe Dameron. But everything else has been original trilogy.
And what's fun about this, even, to some degree, is, you know, the 3PO story of him being trapped on this. They had a Lego short on, you know, that basically had Poe Dameron picking 3PO up from that planet, you know, and then granted that part wasn't canon because it, you know, I had Ackbar and they were fighting, but it was just kind of interesting to see. I think it may have been part of the, like, the Lego game or something, but just to see that they're taking all these ideas, and even when they're not, you know, necessarily canon issues, they're still trying to tie as much as they can around to these things.
Yeah, and the other thing I've really liked is they've made Vader into the super bad guy that he kind of lost a little bit after the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, the I guess probably the most famous one of those is the frame in, what was it, Vader Down, that the crossover at the end of last year where the, you know, the Rebel army is surrounded Vader and they say, you know, you're surrounded. And he said, all I'm surrounded is by fear and dead men. And he just basically goes and kills the ball. Yeah, Vader is at the top of his game in these things, and that's very interesting to see.
Yeah, and I've loved seeing that, because that's the classic Vader that we knew growing up. The guy that could inspire fear just by him being there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you're, you know, I just, it's fascinating that the Empire had people whose job it was to pick up bodies and move them. Because, you know, you see all these admirals, they'll nod to somebody off screen to come pull this body that Vader is just force choked. He did it enough that they had people that actually was their job to take care of corpses. You know, I think that's saying something.
Yeah, and the other thing I liked about the Vader comic was the Emperor continues to challenge him to be better, darker, I don't know.
Yeah, it would be a better Sith. Yeah, and it's interesting because I think the Emperor is also acceptable to replacing Vader if he can find something better.
Yeah.
Even though this whole plan has kind of been in motion for so long, you know, I think, you know, at least I think probably some of that non-canon is that Vader lost some of his Force abilities because he wasn't connected to the Force, being more machine than man. But still being very powerful. But again, the Palpatine was always looking out for, hey, if somebody else has a better connection, we'll get rid of this guy. And the idea that probably was to, you know, that's why he was going after Luke, was to, you know, replace Vader with maybe what Anakin should have been.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen hints at it throughout the whole trilogy when Darth Maul gets killed and Count Dooku's right there, and then Anakin's just about ready, so have him kill Count Dooku. So it's pretty impressive for the character to make it that long as the one apprentice when nobody else we've seen has made it that long.
Yeah, I mean that shows his connection to the Force and how strong he really was. I mean, you know, I have a feeling the Emperor continued to keep an eye on him because he figured Vader was going to try to overthrow him. And he didn't quite have the power to do that, but he still, I mean, and it's, you know, it's the iconic image. I mean, that the images of Vader are one of those things that you can show anybody and they know one, it's Darth Vader, and two, it's evil.
Yeah.
And that has just permeated our society and the society in general. And that's saying something, I think, as well.
Well, I was watching the Peter Mayhew documentary. Or no, not Peter Mayhew. The guy that played Vader, I can't think of his name right now.
David Prowse.
David Prowse. The documentary about him, and they were talking about how even just the silhouette of Vader is so recognizable across the globe.
Yeah, it's incredible, and to have, you know, this, you know, basically small budget cheap movie, if you will, to have, you know, captured people, and to the point that it has, you know, rewritten our language and our iconic imagery, it's just amazing.
Yeah. So, this weekend you're going to be happy, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I don't know. I've kind of gotten adjusted to this December schedule pretty well. Where you're kind of used to the summer blockbuster for Star Wars, but you know, it feels like, I don't know why, but it feels like holidays, Christmas time is really kind of, Star Wars has really kind of encroached on that for in a good way. I mean, I look at, you know, my house, I decorate insanely for Christmas, but out front I have a blow-up Yoda with a Santa hat and a blow-up Vader and a blow-up Chewbacca that has a Milk and Wookiee stocking. We do Star Wars chocolate molds at our parties. I'm probably going to work on Star Wars gingerbreads tonight. Got Star Wars ornaments. I mean, it seems like if there's something Christmassy, Star Wars has taken into that. And I don't know why it has kind of absorbed this holiday, but it feels like, you know, Star Wars should be that kind of movie that you're watching at the holidays. Maybe it's because of family, and maybe it's because, you know, it's something that the generations have grown up with, but it just feels like this is the time of year for, I mean, all year is fine for Star Wars, don't get me wrong. You know, I don't just watch it this time of year, but it feels like there's something more about this, and I think it's been kind of fun to see these releases come out at the end of the year when we can really enjoy them. Now, I don't know how long that's going to last. I know Episode 8 is supposed to come out next December. And right now, I think the Han Solo is scheduled for a May release, but it'll be interesting to see if those kind of change and they kind of let, you know, especially with Disney, let Marvel have the summer and let Star Wars have the winter.
Yeah, they're going to make money either way they do it. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they will not be hurting for anything.
No. All right, well, it's been great talking to you about this.
Well, I've enjoyed it, and I appreciate you having me. You know, it's very rare that I get to go ramble on about stuff that's not the Cardinals, so it's always good to have a change of pace every once in a while.
Oh, I can talk Star Wars anytime, so I understand.
Well, we'll do it again maybe after the movie then or something.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
All right.
Well, you have a good night then.
Hey, you too. So hopefully if you weren't into Star Wars, you're not too bored by that whole discussion. Like I said, tomorrow, Rogue One comes out. It'll be sold out all weekend. Hopefully, I'll be able to see it at least once, maybe twice.
He might go today. He might go tomorrow.
No, probably Friday.
Why?
Because tomorrow night we'll be driving to Milwaukee. All right. So, if you want to follow Daniel on Twitter, he's at C70. And you can read his cardinal writing at cardsconclave.com. Really good cardinal writer. I recommend checking him out. To check out the rest of the Nerdcast stuff, come to nerdcast.com. It's NYRDCAST. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Nerdcast. Again, it's NYRDCAST. We're also on Facebook. Search for it. This week's music is the
Star Wars theme song.
Well, it's the Rogue One theme song. Close enough, though.